Some models that occur in semiconductors when you want to model semiconductor materials, semiconductor devices. These are standard models. This is a slightly different title, which may be a little more accurate, maybe. I'm going to emphasize the boundary conditions, which is what you want when you do a semiconductor device. What I'm talking about, everything I'm talking about here is joint work with Yan Guo. So you take a semiconductor device, which doesn't really look like that, but just a piece of material with some electrons and holes. The holes are like ions. And these models have been constructed because they're getting, devices are becoming smaller and smaller. So there are a number of models. I'll mention these. You can make a kinetic model, which is like a Boltzmann equation. But, of course, it's very expensive to simulate these things. And the thing that's been used for simulation mostly, the model, is the drift diffusion model, which I'll show you in a moment. It's not very accurate when you get to very small scales under some various conditions. So there's an intermediate model, which is like a fluid-type model, which is called the hydrodynamic model, which is what I will talk about. And you can formally go from here to here. So it has a lot of the same characteristics as we've seen the rest of this conference. So here's the equation of the I'm not going to write the Boltzmann model, but in green here is the hydrodynamic model. And what you see here is that you have, let me just show you first the drift diffusion model. The drift diffusion model is basically this, if I can hold this here. Basically that model, and that's a lot easier to compute than the one which where I don't cover up those terms. So you introduce some momentum in a serious way there in order to get the hydrodynamic model. So what you see for the hydrodynamic model is that it practically looks like Euler's equations. It's almost exactly Euler's equations. The first equation is exactly the second equation. All these are Euler equations. And then you have the electric field like in a charged situation of electrostatics. And here's the electric field. And here's the density. And here's the background holes and the doping profile. I'll call it D. So I'm going to model this where rho is just the electron density. And I'm assuming the holes are just in the background. That's part of the D here. And there's a relaxation term, which is standard in these models, which has a tendency to make things go towards equilibrium, we think. And so altogether, the variables are electron density, the velocity of the electron U, which is a vector, the electric field, which is, and I wrote the electric field, I wrote the electric potential here. And so you see it's something more elaborate than the Euler equations, and therefore it cannot be terribly simple to do analytically. There's the pressure, which could be, for example, just rho to the gamma, for example, but in general, just assume that. So that's the system which has been studied in recent years quite a lot. And what I want to talk about today is boundary conditions. So we have this system here, and then I want boundary conditions. So one kind of boundary condition is the insulating kind, which is just what you would think of as insulating. Standard, like in Euler's equations. And another kind, which you can have on the same device, actually, is the contact boundary conditions, where the density and the electric potential are given on the boundary. And actually, you want to do much more complicated things that I'll talk about. You want to consider both of them on the same device in different parts of the boundary and so on. Anyway, these two boundary conditions are really very different from each other. And there is rather little mathematical literature analysis on this problem so far. It just says the electric field is tangential to the it's an insulator, so it's tangential. So it's just tangential to the boundary. Like, it's just saying, oh, nu is the normal. Sorry, nu is the normal to the domain, to the device. The electric field goes that way.
You mean that there's no current in
the. That's right. This says there's no current across the boundary. That says there's no electric field across the boundary. I don't know so much about it. Some people in the audience know more about the model, like Irene, for example. I can't. This is usually called insulating boundary conditions. So electric field just stays inside. Now, their question I want to address. Since you have basically Euler equations with you're not going to get you don't really expect to get like really nice analytic properties like global existence, things like that. But there are steady states. Steady states are partly due to the electric field. And there are plenty of them. And the question is, are they stable? And are there global solutions near these steady states? That's the question I want to talk about today. And there are a number of difficulties associated with that. The equations are seriously nonlinear, which I mentioned. The boundary conditions, they're two kinds. They're different from each other. They prevent a lot of analytic. A lot of things you might want to do if you didn't. I mean, they restrict the possible estimates you can possibly get. And the dissipation, as I mentioned, is only in the momentum equation. You don't have dissipation in, for example, in the mass equation, and so on. And therefore, the dissipation is, in some ways, rather weak. And yet, I would like to find conditions under which these steady states are stable and the solutions go towards the steady states. So the previous results, these that I know of, are of this type. They're mostly in one dimension. There are other very few in more than one dimension, one dimension is very unrealistic, of course. So there are some results without a boundary. So just in all space, no boundary conditions at all. I'm not going to mention the ones in one dimension. There are quite a few results. Quite various people have worked on that. And there's a paper by Shao, Markovich, and Wang, which treats n dimensions with no boundary condition at all. The steady state is constant. That's the only one I really know in higher dimension. I don't know all the literature, but. And with a boundary, there are two papers that I'm aware of that have a boundary. They're both one-dimensional, so you just have an interval. So you have this device, which is a rod, you might say. And on the two ends, you have boundary conditions. And there's the Xiao Yang paper. These are fairly recent papers where the boundary condition is insulating and the steady state, the steady state velocity, is zero. And then there's another paper by Lee, Markovich, and May with contact boundary conditions, one dimension where the steady state velocity is small. And in these papers, this is the steady state, other steady state things, that's the doping profile. These have small variation in both papers. And so in the theorem I'm going to state, they're going to be allowed to have large variation. Two theorems I'm going to state. So you have the unknowns of the velocity, the density, and the electric field. And so the first theorem is that I want to state is in three dimensions with boundary conditions, and insulating boundary conditions seem to be considerably easier than the contact ones. However, we still, we're working on it. At this point, this is a theorem, we have proof. So at this point, we need the initial velocity to be zero. And so we take, it's any domain, and we take any doping profile and any pressure function, satisfying appropriate assumptions. And then, so there's three conclusions. Number one is trivial, actually, because I won't go into that. There is exactly one unique steady state given the doping profile. The steady state has initial velocity zero, so it reduces down to something very standard. So the main result is number two here, which says that if I take initial conditions that are close enough to the steady state, then there is a unique global in time solution. It's a very smooth solution in a high Sobolev space. And in addition, it's asymptotically stable. So the solution actually converges, it relaxes towards the equilibrium with some positive number of gamma there. And so I'm not aware of any other global solution of any type for this system in a domain with boundary and dimension, except in dimension one. The other theorem is of a similar type, and I'm not going to state it in total detail because the conclusions are almost the same, but here we take contact boundary conditions. So take contact boundary conditions. One dimension only, at this time anyway, and initial velocity small. So we have an interval, like in this, all those other unrealistic theorems. You have any doping profile, any pressure function, and then it says again that, so this time there are various steady states for this problem. So take a steady state, and then we get the same kinds of conclusions as that. The only difference is, well, it's one dimension, the boundary conditions are completely different, and then we only need two derivatives instead of one. By the way, earlier in this conference, these are the Sobolev spaces. It just measures, it's just the L2 norm. You measure the deviation in the L2 norm and also take up to two derivatives. Take the L2 norm to those, that's the deviation. So, but you could take more derivatives too. So these solutions are really relaxing towards equilibrium. Okay, these two theorems are very similar, but see, they're key assumptions that are different. And the basic philosophy of the proof, of the two proofs, is basically the same, but the details are quite different. So I'd like to first tell you what the philosophy is. The boundary condition for the for phi naught.
Contact boundary condition that you assume.
Yeah. They can be large. Yeah, they can be large. They can be. Oh, you mean in this? Yeah, it doesn't. Okay, yeah, sure. These steady states have certain. You have to make the state. So you're absolutely right. Sure, this has to be small. The difference has to be small to make this small. To make that difference has to be small to make that small. But we don't actually go into any of the properties of the steady state. We need the steady state to be small. Yeah, that's right. Right, these are continuous. These are smooth. These are nice, smooth, steady states. Yeah, they do have to be small. So this being small means that also has to be small, but there are. Right, exactly. That's correct. And then we take initial data close to that. So yes, it's small. What was that about short circuits?
First case is the case where your device is isolated.
Yeah, that's right. Isolated completely, right.
The other case is where you short circuit the usage of your device.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, those two cases. That's right. Yeah. I haven't seen anything where you combine them yet.
Is it known whether the device also develops boundary layer?
Yeah, I think there are boundary layers when you. I think there probably are boundary layers in the. But you don't see them in these solutions. I just assume an initial state, and there will be boundary layers. So let me just flash this. So that's the equations we're looking at. Right. And we're taking a steady state. Now what I will do is talk about the three-dimensional result. Well, let me first tell you what the philosophy of both cases, and that hopefully that can work in other cases too, but this is how far we've gotten so far. It's a somewhat different method from any of the other papers that I've seen. We actually convert the equation into the system, into a symmetric hyperbolic system by symmetrizing. And that's a standard thing to symmetrize, but we have two things we have to, you learn it in graduate school and PDE. But there are two things we have to worry about, and that's one thing is the boundary conditions. So you have to do a symmetrizer that's compatible with the boundary conditions, whichever one you use. And also, and very important, it has to be compatible with handling the linear terms, because what we're showing is that we're trying to show the system is relaxing towards the steady state, and it's going to be the linear terms, the first order terms, that are going to dominate. We want to show they dominate the quadratic terms, which are like epsilon squares. So we have to control the linear terms. If you just symmetrize, you're not going to be able to do that. And so if we can appropriately symmetrize, we can get decay of the linearized problem and appropriate bounds, and then we take high derivatives. That's more straightforward. So that's the basic idea of symmetrizing. So if I want to do theorem one, which is three dimensions. So I'm in three dimensions, and I take... So here's my density, potential, and velocity, and I expand, and I just write out with tildes the perturbation. This is like delta rho, delta v, delta u, but this is zero in theorem one, in the first theorem. This is zero. Then what I'm going to do is just write the equations for the tildes, and I didn't bother writing the tildes anymore. So from this point on, the rho, u, and phi are the perturbation. And I introduce Q, capital Q is just this pressure function. So so you get this system. It looks like this. So it just looks like this green system here. And now we're looking at we take initial conditions, which are small in the rho, u, and phi, the perturbation, and we want to show it goes to zero. And the boundary conditions in theorem one are the insulating kind. There's no boundary condition on rho at all, which makes life a little difficult. You have to be careful about integrating by parts in rho, because you have no boundary condition at all on the rho. So that's the system written in a reduced form. And from that system, which maybe I can leave on the board. leave up there a little bit. There's a standard energy. This is standard energy. This is well known. You have energy. You have an energy conservation, and then you have. If I just isolate the linear terms, remember I said the nonlinear terms. The nonlinear terms we can handle if we have high enough derivatives, but the linear terms we have to. So if you just take the standard energy estimate, right, the linear term looks like this, and because the system. Oh, so here's the relaxation term, this one. That's the one that's driving it towards equilibrium. That's the one that's doing all the work for us. Otherwise, everything would be conserved. You'd never go towards equilibrium. So tau is just one, say. Tau is a fixed number. And so you see that's only in the momentum equation. So when we get the energy, when we just do standard energy, you get this, and you only have one term, that one relaxation term. I took tau to be equal to 1. Just gives you that term, that one term over there, and you don't have rho or, well, the electric field isn't so important. You don't have rho or the electric field in that up in there. So you don't get decay, and that's what we have to work at. And you can't just take this and go up to higher derivatives, like differentiate the equation and repeat the energy. It won't work at all. The boundary conditions don't work. You get all kinds of junk. So that does not work. So that's where we have to do some work. So we consider. So I'll just. We can just get rid of the. Mathematically, we can get rid of the electric field just by using the last equation here. The last equation. Consider phi as the crossing inverse rho. Just substitute that in. Then we have unknowns that are rho and u. So we write rho and u. We write it as a four vector. Rho is the scalar and u is the velocity. And I'm not writing out the details. So I'm just going to tell you that you can find an explicit symmetrizer. I'll tell you what the symmetrizer is in a moment. So it looks like this. So you take the system written for the four equations, which I've reduced it to four equations, and you multiply by a matrix of E, and you get into symmetric hyperbolic form. The D is, it's not actually, it's fairly simple, but not that obvious what it is. So here's the D. That's D. It's a nonlinear symmetrizer. Okay. So you get symmetric hyperbolic form. Now, if you take this and you do the usual thing that we mathematicians know about symmetric hyperbolic system, you take this, you dot it with W, integrate. It doesn't work because the boundary conditions don't work. However, it's designed so that when you take the time derivative and multiply by the time derivative of W, it does work. And I'm not writing all that down. You've got a lot of terms to worry about. But the boundary term, that's the boundary term. It completely vanishes under the insulating boundary conditions. Exactly. You get this term in the estimate. When you multiply by that thing, you take dTW in the term with the x derivatives, you get this term. And if you work it out exactly, explicitly, it's exactly this. And u dot nu is zero. So it's zero. So therefore, you can get this kind of an estimate. So you compare these two green estimates, the two estimates are at the top and the bottom of this page. See, at the top, we had an estimate, but we were missing the decay on the rho. Here we get an estimate. W is all the components. And we're still missing the estimate on the rho, but we got du dt in here. And we can repeat this the same way for higher derivatives. So we get the decay, the relaxation, so to speak, of the higher derivatives of the velocity, but not the density. How do you get the density? We have to go back to the equation. Um, Yeah. So we require them. We still require an estimate which will ultimately prove decay of the row. And the all those x derivatives, we only took time derivatives. So one of the equations is the the momentum equation, main equation. So if I write the momentum equation rather cryptically, put all nonlinear terms on the other side, and just look at the linear part, the Q prime, that capital Q prime, that's the pressure term. That comes from the pressure term when we linearize. And E is the electric field. So we have, see, we already have estimates on U and on the time derivative here. So we use the pressure term where the pressure is non-trivial. I use the pressure term, think of that as an elliptic operator. Rho is the derivative of E. So what we have there is a second order elliptic operator in the electric field. And this is already good. And the nonlinear terms, we put them all over. They're going to eventually be epsilon squared, big O of epsilon squared terms. So using that, we estimate, and we take lots and lots of derivatives. And after a fair amount of work, we get this estimate, which says that you can estimate, remember, W is both the rho and the U. And so you get estimate all the derivatives in terms of these, which already appeared in the decay estimate. You put that all together, then you get, then this is, then you get an estimate exactly like what you want in green here at the bottom. And that's the basic idea. But the basic thing is to combine the estimates in these ways, which allow for the both the decay and the boundary conditions. Well, just to finish, I'll say a few words about the other equations. The same idea. But the estimates aren't the same, mainly because the boundary conditions aren't the same. Now, we haven't been able to do this in more than one dimension yet. And it's very convenient when you do contact boundary conditions, especially, to introduce change variables and instead of velocity, introduce the current. The current J equals rho U. So just, you can change the equation. So it looks like this then. After, so now, if the system is now in this form. J is the perturbed current. Rho is the density, any of the electric field. So it looks like this. Only one dimension, so I just wrote subscripts X for X derivatives. And the boundary condition is, now, I've subtracted off the real boundary condition is that rho and phi are given at the endpoints, but now I take them, we take the perturbation to not, to subtract, so that the perturbation will be zero at the endpoints. Okay. There's no boundary condition now on the J, the current. That's missing, so we can't integrate by parts in the J directly. Okay, so again, we need a, if the basic philosophy is exactly the same as before, the estimates are quite different, which is why I have two really quite different theorems. So here's the symmetrizer, which we found. We found a unique symmetrizer. It's hard to find. If we want to do what we want to do, this is the symmetrizer you've got to use. It's kind of a mess. The symmetrizer is a, well, we now have a 2x2 matrix. It plays the same role as we had before. This 2x2 matrix, 0, 0, is diagonal with R. R is a function. I'm using this notation. And R is a function that has to satisfy exactly this ordinary differential equation, actually. So you take this, and R is, you take a positive solution of that equation, and that makes the, that symmetrizes, it preserves the boundary conditions, and it allows you to keep the decay you need for the linearized part of the equation. So yeah.
Don't
The doping part with sharp discontinuity. No, we're assuming it's smooth. We're assuming, well, yeah, we're assuming it's smooth. This thing at the bottom? No, this is, sorry, this is not the doping profile. Yeah, right, this is a different D, sorry. Yeah, what? I'm not. Yeah. This is what? A doping profile? I didn't really. Sorry, I didn't understand what you wanted to modify. Oh, whether this the doping profile has disappeared in the steady state. There's no doping profile in the equation anymore, is there? No, the system has a doping profile, but I've subtracted because you subtract off the linear. This is the perturbation. The actual system. No, we have, yeah, we start with a solution that has the doping, has that doping profile. Exactly. I mean, that's the system in the original. Without, rho is the whole thing. Rho, U, and E are the whole thing. That's doping profile. I take a steady state with that doping profile. And then I perturb. So in the perturbation, the doping profile disappears. It's subtracted off. Okay. Yeah, we have to know that there is a steady state. We just have to know there is a steady state and it's smooth. That's all we know. And like the details, like the boundary layers, all these things, are we don't have to deal with if we have a given steady state. Yeah, of course, that's another very important question to find steady state. Right, that's another thing I'm not talking about. But theorem one, there was a... Theorem 1, and that was a simple case that was definitely unique, very simple steady state. In theorem 2, with the contact boundary conditions, this is an issue to be analyzed. Right? Okay. Thanks.